Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Friday morning. It's actually afternoon for one of the guys on this pod. We'll talk about that in a second. First off, joining us from New York City is Tim Bontemps.
Hello, fellas.
I got to tell you, Bontemps, never before in his many years on this planet had Ban McMahon made it over to Europe until this month. Mm-hmm. And he went to France and somewhere else for his honeymoon. I think, was it just
France? It was France. No, it was Paris France and the French Riviera.
Okay.
Two stops.
Then he came back home to Texas, which is where he is very comfortable and well-loved. Now, Bontemps.
Pit stop in L.A. where they don't love him as much.
And then he left.
He was in L.A. last week when we did the pod. Okay, he was in L.A.
This is a Fidel-like itinerary, not at home at all.
Now he is in Ljubljana, Slovenia. Did I pronounce that correctly?
Ljubljana. The J's
were Ljubljana. Wow. Ljubljana. Another first. McMahon getting the pronunciation right and someone else.
I've worked on it. If you want a slang, it's Ljubljana, but yeah.
Okay. Wow. Well, McMahon admitted into Eastern Europe with a questionable background. Why are you in Slovenia?
Well, Wendy, thanks to you, I've got a book deal. You know, you obviously are This is the truth. You're a multiple time New York Times bestselling author. You've worked with the same agent, the same publisher, and they reached out to you and were kind of kicking around ideas and said, you know what, we'd be interested in some sort of book on Luka Doncic. And you, being the good friend that you are, said, call McMahon. And so we talked it through.
Risked his reputation on that one.
Do I have the guy for you? And then when that guy wasn't available, then they called.
Well, whatever. So anyways, agreed to that deal. And, you know, I didn't want to just write a book about, Luka's, wow, this guy's amazing. Everybody knows that. I didn't think there's a whole lot of interesting ground to uncover there. And so kind of the premise of the book is I'm writing about the pressure that an NBA franchise takes when they draft a prodigy and writing it through the Luka prism. And obviously there's been a lot of things that have happened with the Mavericks during his career that will all be in there. But I thought to write this book, I needed to get out. I needed to see where he's from. I needed to see him compete with his national team. I do think the fact that Luka plays for Slovenia, when he could have gone to Serbia, he could have gone to Spain, and plays for every game that matters for the national team, that does show a strong sense of loyalty. So I wanted to kind of get a feel for that, you know, to talk to a lot of people around here. So I'm going to spend a week here. I got to see them play Estonia last night in his home country.
Yeah, so they're getting ready for the European Championships, known as Eurobasket. Everybody's warming up for it. Some big time stuff.
And these are World Cup. These are World Cup qualifying window games too. At the same time, Slovenia was beating Estonia. Serbia and Greece had a classic.
Yeah, I was just going to say, can you imagine Luka and Jokic playing together for Serbia? That would be a pretty terrifying.
Oh my God,
team.
That would be terrifying. Well,
they played against each other here in a friendly. So these games, right?
I have a feeling that game wasn't very friendly in the crowd.
Yeah, that one went to overtime, and like those guys played, like they played to win. But these World Cup qualifying games really mean something. Then Eurobasket starts next week, so I'll go to Cologne for group play. And it's a great group. It's Slovenia, France, obviously, which knocked Slovenia out, or beat Slovenia in the medal round in the Olympics. Lithuania, which
This is the group of death.
Yeah, Slovenia, as you know, when he beat Lithuania, Luka put up a triple double on Lithuanian soil to claim the Olympic berth, which is the first for.
It was one of the most amazing things that happened last summer. I know most American fans, you know, didn't care about it, but
hell of a performance.
Yeah,
16 of the 18 teams make the knockout round, so they'll all be in the knockout round. Though I figured this out the other day when I was talking to somebody who's going over there. I looked it up. I was like, "Oh, basically everybody makes the knockout round."
So right now, Jokic is playing for Serbia, Giannis is playing for Greece, Luka is playing for Slovenia.
The French guys are all playing, right, McMahon? Your boy Rudy and everybody.
Rudy Gobert, Evan Fournier. I'm not sure about all of them, but certainly those two guys who have been you know, their stars on this.
Did you know the Americans played a game in World Cup qualification yesterday? If you can tell me who they played, I will give you one full Hoop Collective point credit.
Nah, I do.
A currency I just invented.
I have absolutely no clue who they would have played yesterday.
The Americans played Uruguay and were victorious.
Oh, wow. I would now, think so.
Big win.
I believe they are now 6-1 in World Cup qualification in the windows.
This is a really tough. I actually got this wrong. It's 4 out of 16 in each group make it. This is a really tough group. France, Bosnia, Lithuania, Slovenia, Hungary, and Germany. There's five legit teams there, including Germany.
I don't love Hungary's odds.
No. everybody else is legit though. I mean, somebody who's good is not going to make it out.
Yeah, and I'm really looking forward to that. You know, I'm going to obviously last night, Estonia is not quite competition. Then Slovenia kind of was sleepwalking early in the first quarter. Estonia is actually leading. This kid, he's got he plays for Arizona, actually, a kid named Kerr Kriska. He's a smallish guard with a peach fuzz mustache and goatee, had like a shoelace headband. He ended up leading Estonia in scoring last night, but he came off the bench. And while he was on the bench, he was talking so much trash to Luka. And what he was basically saying is stop whining about all the calls. You're getting all the superstar calls. And it was, and Luka was barking back at him. Yeah, he was barking back at him. He was like, when Luka would make a play, turn around, like talk trash and laugh. And it was a pretty classic Luka performance last night. 25 points, 11 rebounds, 8 assists, kind of did whatever he wanted on the floor, talked a bunch of trash and spent a lot of time hollering at the referees. And did not do media after the game. So it was like, check. That is Luka at his best.
By the way, all these Eurobasket games are on Watch ESPN. We should be company men and point that out. So if you want to watch, just want to see McMahon at Cologne, you could turn on Watch ESPN and see if you see him in the stands.
While Eurobasket's going on with a whole bunch of NBA All-Stars, should you want to watch the American team playing in the AmeriCup, which is in Brazil, against all the Central and South American teams and Canada.
Not quite Eurobasket.
No. But that is going on. Next summer is the World Cup. It is in the Philippines. That will be Steve Kerr's first time coaching, being the head coach of... So right now, the teams are trying to qualify for that. The Americans are pretty much locked into qualifying.
Jordan Clarkson is playing for the Philippines, by the way.
That is correct.
Yes. So, okay, let's talk about the NBA. That was, hey, McMahon, we're so glad you're over there doing this. We'll hear more about this next week, I'm sure, as you continue on your travels. You talked about Evan Fournier there. What's the chance Evan Fournier is traded while he's over in Europe in the next week? Because the Jazz are beginning their business. They made their first, post-Gobert move earlier this week when they traded Patrick Beverley to the Lakers. We'll talk about that in a second. McMahon, you said, I believe, last week that you thought that the Jazz would make a Donovan Mitchell trade before the opener. And it sounds to me, in talking to people around the league, that the Jazz want to try to go even sooner than that they want to go before training camp. Now,
yes, some of this, of course.
Yeah. Some of this could be an arbitrary deadline. You always see this in trades where a team says they invent a deadline to force, to force a team into action because they know that teams make their best offers when there's a deadline. The real trade deadline isn't obviously until February. So,
right.
But it does sound, as I talk to folks in the league, like the Jazz are trying to apply the gas here, trying to juice the offers, especially juice the offer from the New York Knicks.
Right. And that's, you know, it's basically they're trying to get the Knicks to put the kind of offer that it will take to get Donovan Mitchell on the table before training camp, because we've talked about this. Will Hardy, you just hired him. You gave him a long-term contract, 5-year deal. He's a 34-year-old first-time head coach. You know, not that he can't overcome having a total circus as he starts his rookie training camp, essentially as a head coach, but man, that would be certainly less than ideal to throw him into that kind of a situation, as opposed to, okay, everybody understands this franchise is just starting a rebuild, and give him a chance to lay the foundation without having the dominant storyline being the Donovan Mitchell drama.
Well, look, more importantly than that, they're trying to win 16 games and be in the best position possible to get Victor Wembanyama. And to do that, having Donovan Mitchell on the team is not going to help with that. So it's part of why Patrick Beverley got traded yesterday. Part of why I expect more of their vets to get traded the next couple months. And it's why, to your point, man, it doesn't make sense for the Jazz to have him on the team when training camp starts. And it doesn't make sense for the Knicks to not have him on the team when training camp starts.
Exactly. So yeah.
It's just a matter of seeing where this gets to the end.
Yeah. If you're the Knicks, you're trying to get this guy and have him be your franchise player, you know, him and Brunson be, you know, the backcourt, the new backcourt for now. And, you know, for years to come, you want as much time with those guys in the gym together practicing as possible. So I think it's in both teams' best interest to get this deal done before camp starts, but it is an artificial deadline. And we all understand that Danny Ainge is not going to pull the trigger until he gets his price.
Okay. So let's go in. Let's take ourselves into the Jazz front office conference room right now. Danny Ainge, Justin Zanuck, their GM, David Fisdale. I don't know what his title is. David Fisdale. They're all sitting around. What do they
Dwayne want? Wade takes a break from watering his lawn in L.A. and calls in.
Dwayne is on Zoom. Ryan Smith, the owner, sitting on his piles of money. He just got a big investment from a private equity firm. They're looking at the boards. To me, and feel free to correct me if you guys think I'm wrong, as they look at who's interested in Donovan Mitchell options, which are obviously the Knicks, the Heat, I think, are a team that have interest. It's been reported that the Hornets and Wizards have interest. I believe Ian Begley of SNY reported the Cavs have interest. I can confirm that the Cavs have talked to the Jazz in the last week. You look at those teams, to me, the most valuable thing that you can get out of all those is New York Knicks unprotected draft picks. Mm-hmm. Because, and you can correct me again if I'm wrong, first off, I don't know if Washington and Charlotte have the requisite firepower to make the trade, primarily because their draft picks are somewhat encumbered. They can't offer the same number of picks because they owe future picks.
I mean, they can't come close.
Okay. So the Cavs are interesting. The Cavs can offer three unprotected firsts. They're not going to give Evan Mobley or Darius Garland. I would be surprised if they would give Jared Allen. In fact, I'll just tell you, I heard the Cavs said Jared Allen's not available. Those three guys, Jared Allen, Darius Garland, and Evan Mobley. I heard they told the Jazz they're not available.
Well, and if you're going to have Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell as your backcourt, you need Mobley and Jared Allen.
That's on
the,
right.
Or to protect the
but
room
I think
for
everything
you.
Else on the platter for the Cavs is available, which would be any other player they have, which, you know, they have
not some, very much.
There's no, like, it would all be draft pick related, but you can get three unprotected picks.
You know, Kevin Love can get you up there in salary pretty quick, and then you're talking flyers and young talent.
Yeah, and I mean, you could potentially retrade Kevin Love also. You could do a deal for you could do a deal in a sign and trade for Colin Sexton. That would be complicated because you have to agree to that contract, and I don't know if the Jazz are going to do that. But I mean, okay. But my point is, if you trade Donovan Mitchell to the Cavs, you're looking at a team that has two all-stars from last season. You're trading them an all-star, and Evan Mobley wasn't an all-star, and it's a fair bet that he would be. I think that Cavs team would be pretty good, which is why the Cavs, I think, are in this bidding. And I don't know how good those picks would be. Now, the Cavs picks they can offer are 25, 27, and 29. Who knows 2029? Donovan Mitchell might be long gone by then.
I was going to say that that's the biggest difference between the Cavs and not the biggest difference, but one main difference between the Cavs and the Knicks and or Heat is that if the Knicks are trading for Donovan Mitchell, you're probably trading for Donovan through his prime. Whereas the Cavs, you might turn around in a year or two and he's trying to force his way out of there.
True. But he does have 3 years on his contract. So, The Heat can offer two firsts, and they could make a deal with the Thunder to potentially offer three. But if you look at what the Heat have on their roster, again, are you wagering, which picks are you wagering are going to be better? The Heat picks, the Cavs picks, or the Knicks picks? And, you know, the Knicks, if they traded for Donovan Mitchell, would be a huge home run for them, but they're still, they're not in the same ballpark as the other two teams. So, and frankly, the Knicks over the last decade haven't been good. Over the last 20 years haven't been good. So to me, if I'm in the Jazz front office, I am trying to get as many unprotected Knicks picks as I can get in this trade. Now, I know that there's other picks that they have. They have picks that they got from Oklahoma City on draft night that are protected first-round picks. They actually, the Knicks actually own the Wizards draft pick and control when the Wizards can make the next trade, because the Wizards have a pick that they traded to Houston that has protections on it. Now, when you have protections on
this is the pick from the John Wall deal that Oklahoma City got in the Alperen Şengün deal, and now went to the Knicks in this draft.
And the for the Osman Jang deal, if you want to.
Yes. And then they got so they have the Washington pick, and then they have the Detroit pick that I think originally went to same Houston to OKC. I think that's originally from like Trevor Ariza.
They have three extra picks besides theirs. One of them is also Dallas's pick.
Dallas is this year, which is top 10. So you can expect that one to be, you know, the other two, I think you're going to have to wait on because the protections, like, you know, de-escalates.
Right, but the chances of that pick being a lottery pick, right, those other three picks are much farther out. So
correct.
Like, again, you can, if, you know, I know that people are focusing on the number of picks, how many picks in total can the Knicks offer? But the reality is the quality of those picks matter, because one unprotected Knicks pick in the right year can be worth all three of those protected picks. So that, to me, Bontemps, is what the Jazz are trying to do here. And what they're trying to pull out of the Knicks is is many, they can trade up to four. That's what they're legally allowed to trade. That's what they're going to want. And so that, to me, is the basis. It's not the only thing that's going on in Donovan Mitchell talks, but that's the basis of what's going on here.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, certainly I would say it's a combination, right? The Knicks have the most stuff to offer, period, which helps. And as you said, their history would say that if you bet on Knicks unprotected picks, you're probably going to be in pretty good shape. And let's also be honest. Like, look, I mean, you mentioned like Charlotte. I would rather have Charlotte unprotected picks than the Knicks, like, if you're ranking those assets. But Charlotte's not, I wouldn't think, giving up the same number of unprotected picks and the same number of picks as the Knicks are in a trade. Like,
I think they're also encumbered.
Well, they are, but even let's say they give up three, if they gave up three unprotected firsts in the future, I think Utah would probably do that, because there's a good chance that is going to be a disaster in Charlotte down the road if they make that trade, because Donovan's probably not going to stay there. Who knows what happens with the Melo ball? That could get messy really fast for them. But the reason why the Knicks sit there as a likely team is that Donovan Mitchell wants to be on the Knicks. Right. So if you're giving up these unprotected picks, if you're the Knicks, you think, hey, we've got this guy, not just for the next 3 years, but for the next 10. And that's where the calculus comes in, where if you're the Knicks, you give up these picks, you get this guy, you get him in the building. You then have somebody that can potentially draw other stars there. Cause as we've seen for years now, the Knicks have been trying to get in the room with star players and have been failing to do so. This would give them a guy who could recruit guys there. And again, like, you look at these other teams, like Cleveland has nothing to trade. Charlotte really has nothing to trade. Washington has nothing to trade. Like, these teams that are being rumored as potential challengers,
I mean,
to
Washington,
the Knicks.
Washington has a couple of interesting young players, but I don't think.
Not really.
You know,
not really.
I mean, the Knicks very clearly can put the best offer on the table. The Knicks are trying not to bid against themselves.
That's right.
The Jazz are trying to create a market where the Knicks are bidding against other teams. But, like, we don't know when it happens. We don't know the terms. But I'm pretty sure we know what ends up happening, and that's Donovan Mitchell gets traded to the Knicks. And it's not just, you know, it is about which picks. is there any protection? What are, you know, what is the protection? You know, is it, how light is the protection? All that kind of stuff. How many picks? And then which young players? And then the salary filler. And the salary filler matters because, you know, for example, Derrick Rose, who the Jazz have traded for before and released, is an expiring deal where I believe Fournier has one more guaranteed year left. You know, just stuff like, so there's a lot of different things that are part of the discussion. But again, I my guess is this gets done close to the start of camp and he ends up in New York.
Let's look at the deal that the Jazz made for Gobert. Mm-hmm. They weren't very focused on the players that they were getting back. In fact, the players they were getting back, they're already beginning to retrade. So when you think about players that you're offering to the Jazz, if none of them are like foundational pieces, like for example, if the Knicks are keeping RJ Barrett out of the deal, I mean, the Jazz may not even want RJ Barrett in the deal, not because of his commentary as a player, but they may not be looking to be building up their team. They may be wanting to start from scratch. But when the Jazz get a player, they may be looking at it as, can we flip this guy for something? So they've already flipped Beverly. There's a decent chance that they're going to flip Malik Beasley at some point, maybe not before the season, but maybe during the season. We already think that there's a chance that Bojan Bogdanović and Mike Conley might get moved once the Mitchell thing gets settled.
Or before.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. We'll see. I would suspect that they would leave all avenues open there. But that's one thing that you want to think about. And so Bontemps and I actually were kicking around, well, what other teams, because we don't know who is all called the Jazz. What other teams, and I also talked to some other teams out there in the league, what other teams potentially could make an offer to Utah for Mitchell that maybe we should, you know, that again, maybe we don't know if they have, but we should just put on the radar. Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, but nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, girl-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. And Bontemps, who did, I think you came up with it. Maybe I did. I don't know. But who did we talk about as sort of a team we should just watch, just put on the watch list for like a secret Donovan?
Well, especially with Kevin Durant off the board, the one team I think to look at is Toronto. I mean, they have all their picks. They have you have OG Anunoby. They have Gary Trent. They have some interesting players they could put in trade salary wise. And Masai Ujiri has shown a willingness to take a swing on guys in the past, obviously with Kawhi, most notably. And certainly you put Donovan Mitchell with Scottie Barnes and, you know, if you keep Pascal Siakam in that trade, Pascal Siakam and Fred VanVleet, say, if that's a trade built around OG Anunoby, like, that's a pretty damn good team in Toronto. Yeah. So,
yeah. So the Raptors own all of their picks going forward, I believe. And if you put OG Anunoby in that deal, which OG has been floated around in some trade stuff recently, you know, he's a guy you'd need to sign an extension to. But even if you didn't sign him an extension, you could then probably retrade him. We just saw DeJounte Murray go for 2 firsts. I know that OG isn't got the resume of DeJounte Murray, but if you're the Jazz, you could maybe think that you might be able to trade OG Anunoby for two first, maybe not an unprotected first, but you know, that's you know, part of the calculus that I think the Jazz are looking at is if we get players in this draft, can we move them onward?
Yeah. And I think what we've seen with the Jazz in the Gobert deal is they prioritize getting no money going forward, right? All the picks in the world, and then taking flyers on young guys who are on rookie deals, you know, Vanderbilt, Bomaro. Certainly the Knicks have, you know, several of those guys who would be intriguing. Again, Barrett would be, you have to pay him. Anunoby, got to pay him. You know, I say it's like Anunoby and Gary Trent. Gary Trent's already paid, but, you know, as you said, maybe they can turn around and flip those guys in that scenario. But again, I just think for what the Jazz have basically told us they want with the Gobert deal, the Knicks are the perfect match.
Yeah. Okay. So speaking of trading for young players, they traded for a young player this week in Talen Horton Tucker, who is still only 21 years old. They do the Beverly deal. I think there will be a market if/when they decide to move Bojan Bogdanović and Mike Conley and Malik Beasley. I think there will be multiple teams interested. I don't know how many teams were interested in Patrick Beverly, but the Lakers obviously were there. Bontemps got me on this a few weeks ago. Bontemps and I were talking about the market for THT, and I thought there would be some market for him. And Bontemps was pretty firm, saying no, there's no market for him.
What did THT shoot from 3-point range last season? 26.9%. What did he shoot the year before 27. From 3-point range?
22 or something.
28.2%.
Oh yeah. All right.
You know, well, he's a really good player for what we think the Jazz are going to be doing, and that is trying to develop guys and losing
a lot of games,
leap of games.
Look, if you need the ball in your hands to be effective offensively, you have to be really damn good to be a effective NBA player at this point.
Yeah.
If that's your role, and Talen Horton Tucker is an intriguing. Well, listen, he's an intriguing player. He's got, you know, he's 6'4", he's super long. He's got potential as a good defensive player. But if you are not hitting shots and you have to be basically a ball handling point guard to be on the court, like, you got to be a really good player to make that role work. And obviously playing with LeBron, that was not going to work. So we'll see in Utah, presumably without Donovan Mitchell, like, he could have a pretty nice year for them. Like, I like McMahon said, for what the Jazz are trying to do, I think it's a good swing for them to get him for Patrick Beverly and see if he could turn him into something.
I'm talking more about from the Lakers' perspective, though.
Well, yes, but that's my point. That was the only kind of spot he was going to land in. Where somebody was going to see value.
I started, after you and I disagreed about that, I started asking some executives I was just having routine talks with, you know. And I even talked to one team who had talks with the Lakers about him. And he just said, yeah, he just doesn't have much value, you know? Yeah. And so
he's overpaid on that contract. He's not a $10 million, $11 million player.
Well, this is one of the things I was thinking about. He's got
a player
option.
It would have been nice if the Lakers had paid Alex Caruso that contract instead of.
All right, we're not going to go. Yeah, we know. They could have traded him for Kyle Lowry. That's, in retrospect, it can get even worse than that.
But no, for the Lakers, I really think this deal was all about the potential of a Pat Bev, Russell Westbrook backcourt. I think those guys are really going to mesh well. I think that the chemistry is going to be great. It's instant chemistry. I think it's going to be kumbaya and, you know, the happy times are here again in Lakerland.
I've forgotten until after the trade, the Beverly holding his nose last year while playing.
Dude,
the Lakers.
That is – so this goes all the way back to Rockets Thunder.
Yeah, I was
going to
say,
all
back to when he banked and Russ's
and Russ had to get.
No, I know how long it goes back. I had just forgotten about the hold the nose thing right to his face last
year. So you guys will remember the old – you know, Pat Bev be tricking y'all. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
I was the one who asked that question. And obviously, I tweeted it. That tweet blew up the other night, which is however many years old. And it was funny. I asked because Pat Bev, I thought he did a good job when he was guarding Harden in that game. But I asked the question because I was being a total, you know, agitator. And I knew Russ
you were being you. You were being Patrick Beverly.
I had the sharp stick and I poked Russ and he delivered on that one. But no, I mean, obviously
that was when he said that he's just running around out there. Right.
He's tricking us. He's just running around out there doing nothing. He doesn't play defense, you know, all that kind of stuff, which is actually, you know,
I was going to say that's more true than it is in a lot of the time too.
It also describes Russell Westbrook's defensive approach, and always has been. So
yeah,
you know, it's
he's not always no he's not always thing. He's not always running around. But
no, I would say that I think it's certainly reasonable to believe that this further increases the odds that Russell Westbrook won't be on the Lakers roster. Like, you can't have those guys on a team together. And by the way, you couldn't have Russ on that team anyway. So I said increases. I don't know if it's dramatic because I think it was certainly headed that way. But I like the addition of Pat Bev for the Lakers. I mean, he's a total maniac, but that team could use a total maniac. And, you know, he does set a tone. And listen, Pat Bev is certainly excellent at patting himself on the back very loudly and demonstratively, but he's right. When he goes to teams, they get better. When he goes to teams, they make the playoffs. When he goes to teams in Minnesota, which couldn't sniff the playoffs, they have a play-in championship parade. Championship parade. I'm a scores table. Come on, baby.
And the Lakers, that was wild.
The Lakers are due. Yeah. For a play-in championship parade. That's how that, you know, they weren't able to get in there last year. So if they win the play-in this year, Pat Bev's going to jump on that table. I bet you LeBron will be right next to him. Really, you know, I think LeBron would really appreciate a play-in championship at this point.
Yeah. That's one thing he does not have in his resume. That resume is full, but play-in championship that's an empty spot in the trophy case. You're right.
That's true. Uh-huh. I mean, listen, to me, this trade said two things. For Utah, it said they were open for business in terms of trading these guys, including Donovan. And they were going to get this show on the road and start getting this roster ready for training camp. And for the Lakers, this combined with LeBron signing that extension last week, to me, signals that, as McMahon said, it's time to move on from Russ and to get some more pieces on this team. Because now you have LeBron and AD and Patrick Beverley. And if Kendrick Nunn resurfaces, you have Kendrick Nunn as a potential NBA player. And that's four NBA players on the team.
Well, if you could turn totally Russ disregarding in, full taxpayer mid-level signing Lonnie Walker IV.
Yeah, I mean, to this point, he has not really been a good NBA player. He's been a pretty bad NBA player who I think we can all guess why he's on the Lakers.
Did you mention needs a new nickname, Austin Reeves?
No, that's a fair point. I didn't mention him. He's another guy who can play. But the bottom line is they've got four or five guys who you think can maybe play. They need two or three more guys. And way they can do that.
The question is it worth throwing both picks in to get Buddy Hield and Miles Turner? Two guys who I think certainly you look at this roster now. I think you can argue that those guys would be really good fits. I mean, if you've got Pat Bev, Anthony Davis, and Miles Turner, I think you've got the makings of a pretty solid defensive team. You know, Turner can shoot it. Obviously, Buddy Hield's a great shooter. You know, you've got the spacing around. Pat Bev's a solid spot-up shooter. You've got the spacing around LeBron and AD. I mean, if you get those two guys, I'm not saying I think the Lakers are, you know, vaulting to the top of the Western Conference, but I certainly think that's a solid playoff team at the least. Now, is that worth two picks? I don't know about that.
I mean, that's a legitimate team. Like, the Lakers going into this offseason didn't have a legitimate team around LeBron and AD. I mean, they just had all these minimum players. They had no salaries they could move. If you add Beverly and Hield and Miles Turner, or you call back Utah and you get Mike Conley and Bojan Bogdanovic and another piece, like, you can.
Yeah, maybe Clarkson, whatever.
Right. You at least then have a full 7-8-man rotation of legitimate NBA players at that point. Like, and then with LeBron and AD, if they're healthy, like, yeah, the Lakers could maybe have a shot to do something this year. But like, with Talen Horton-Tucker and Russell Westbrook on the team, they had no shot to do anything.
All right.
So at least this is repositioning the roster in the way it always should have been, which is LeBron and AD surrounded by catch and shoot role players. Like, that's what you need to have around those guys. And Pat Beverly, you know, while he's a bit overrated, I think, is, like you said, McMahon, a okay defensive player, and he's a quality
I mean, catch and shoot guy.
He's better than an okay defensive player. Like, say what you want about his antics and all that. Pat Bev is a good defensive player. He's a good defensive player. Now, you know, I remember the playoffs against the Mavs when Luka screamed loudly in his face, too effing small. And certainly that was an accurate description. Well, he's not able to guard.
A lot of perimeter players are too small for Luka.
Yeah, welcome to the club. Find me the 6'2", 6'3", guy who's going to stop Luka. But again, Pat Bev is a defensive tone setter and a complete pest. He's a good defensive player. Let's not act like it's all reputation. That's not fair.
All right.
Well, I don't think it's all reputation.
I do think that there's I'm not 100% sure Indiana is going to completely rip its team down, more just because they're only just now showing that they're willing to entertain tanking, but it's a reasonable chance they could do a deal. Utah is going to rip it down. And after they do Donovan, those other players are going to be available. So the Lakers, in addition to any other talks that they may have out there with teams, if they're willing to trade those two picks, they're going to have at least a couple of different options. So my guess is that Westbrook at some point is going to be traded, and they're going to be able to get a couple of guys to add to this roster. The question is it going to be good enough to make them a top six team? We're not going to know yet. And it's the Mitchell deal is a vitally important thing for the Knicks, a vitally important thing for the Jazz. And the deal that Rob Pelinka makes with the two picks he's still got with Westbrook is a vitally important deal to the Lakers, at least for the short term. I'm not saying it's going to change the title. I don't think any of those deals potentially change the title, but it's really big for those franchises. And these are things that are hanging out there at the end of August. We do not normally see something like this. And it's because of the KD thing was dragged out for whatever it was, seven weeks. And because the Donovan Mitchell is out there, it's just causing it. So there's still a lot more business to happen here with some of the biggest franchises. We'll be talking more about that. Okay. Trivia time. That means it's Mr. Bontemps. Mr. Bontemps this time. I don't believe the sponsor is operating at this current time.
I was just pointing that out.
We got fired.
Brian probably derailed it with his repeated forgetting of the sponsor.
Where am I going to drive now?
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Now it's time for our Hoop Collective Trivia.
We talked a lot about the Knicks, so simple question. Who is the last Knicks guard to make as many All-Star teams as Donovan Mitchell or more, which is three?
Ooh. So he made them while he was on the Knicks.
We don't have to go all the way back to Clyde days, do we?
Nope.
Allen Houston.
Nope.
Is Latrell Sprewell?
They both made All-Star teams, but they didn't make three. Allen, I believe, made two, and Latrell made one. Yes, that's correct.
While they were on the Knicks.
Yep. There are, I believe, three all time. John Starks didn't. I think there's three all time, and Clyde is one of them, which tells you the plight of Knicks
You kind of need really good guards.
Well, that's why the Knicks have won two championships ever, and they were both in the early 70s with Earl Monroe and Walt Frazier.
So it was after Walt Frazier.
Yeah, so Earl Monroe and Walt Frazier were two of them, right?
No.
Yeah.
Not Monroe?
Earl did twice.
Not Mark Jackson.
Mark Jackson's the last point guard to make the team. 1989, last Knicks point guard to make an all-star team. Wow. I thought that would be too easy of a question.
It wasn't Michael Ray Richardson, was it?
Ding, ding, ding. That's the answer.
Wow.
I'm good at
what
this,
what a
man.
Great question.
I mean, come on.
Well, I mean, it took you like
what
10
What a great
guesses.
Question Listen, and what a great
yeah, but
answer.
As far as trivia goes, if it wasn't for me, the ship be sinking.
I agree. I'm not
that's
good
a good
at
line.
It.
The other guard who's made at least three All-Star teams as a Knick uniform is Richie Guerin, who made the Hall of Fame like 10 years ago and played in the 60s, which you guys have never heard of. He's a very nice guy.
I've heard of him, but I wouldn't have known he made, I wouldn't have thought about it.
Yeah.
I was really proud of not only my Michael Ray Richardson answer, but my reference to his all-time classic quote. And I felt like I didn't get the appropriate.
No, I enjoyed it.
I was giving you applause.
If Michael Ray had been playing in today's NBA, he would have been a celebrity on every front. He would have been a social media superstar with his
Ant-Man
quotes. I mean, the Ant-Man's not a bad comparison, actually, game-wise. He was a big-time player.
Lifestyle-wise, there's no comp.
Wow, that's true. But
all right, well, we've reached the part of the program where we talk about a team and here in the offseason, what's going on in this week. What team is we going to do? It's probably already in the podcast description and they know. So I'm not even going to draw out the suspense. What's going on in Brooklyn?
Why? Why would they do that? Very strange trade.
Why would you do that?
And here's the caveat that we're going to have here. We're going to do something revolutionary for what's going on in Brooklyn. We're going to talk about basketball. We're going to talk about actual on the court Brooklyn Nets basketball, not
with
drama.
With the caveat that there will be drama. This team, if we're playing a video game, I really like the roster. I think we can win a bunch. There will be drama. You have
okay, and we'll
guys
talk about it when it happens.
Never happy and tried to fire when it happens. It's continued. Oh, by the way,
I know, but that's not the point of the segment. We're talking.
He's
about
already gone off
talking,
the rails.
We're talking about
this. This segment be sinking. This segment be sinking.
The team
that
on the
beautifully
court.
Written that beautifully written statement, co-signed by Boardroom. Kevin Durant, very active on Twitter, never slapped a retweet on it. Did reply to Pat Beverly, basically saying, thanks for holding up the whole league. Anyways, on the court, fine, let's do it. Let's pretend that we think that Kyrie is going to be available on a consistent basis. Let's pretend.
I, for the record, think he's going to be this year. That would be
a bold
prediction.
To prove.
But...
He gets injured a lot. It's already problematic that he's injury prone, but it's the non-injury absences that are what concern you. But okay, well, let's assume that he's going to play 60 games. Mm-hmm. That's not unreasonable to us.
And be healthy for the playoffs. We'll say 60 and be healthy for the playoffs. Same with KD. Royce O'Neal was the original prompt for the old fingers firing and what's going on in Utah, that trade. But that's a win now trade. Royce is a solid defensive player. Part of the problem in Utah is he was by far their best perimeter defender and was overmatched a lot of times, either size wise or quickness wise. Yeah. But he's a solid defender who offensively is only going to shoot open threes and move the ball. So I think that's a really nice fit. With two ball dominant guys, Joe Harris is a wild card coming back from the ankle surgery, but again, they've got a lot of shooting around KD and Kyrie. If Joe Harris is healthy, O'Neal's a good 3-point shooter.
Yeah, I don't want to just move past that. Okay, Joe Harris. Now, granted, he had two surgeries, and this is one of the things as you talk about the Nets basketball. They got three of their top six players, seven, depending on how you want to rank them, who are coming off surgery. You got Ben Simmons, you got Seth Curry, and you got Joe Harris. Joe Harris is coming off two surgeries. But having said that,
roll out the lineup of Seth Curry and Joe Harris with Ben Simmons, Kyrie, and KD, assuming they all play. Big assumption, I know. That is a potentially unstoppable offensive lineup.
Joe Harris, career three-point shooting, 44%. Seth Curry, career three-point shooting, 44%. Guess what he shot on three-pointers after he got traded to Brooklyn last year? 47%. Mm-hmm. That was a small sample size. But just 47%.
Put the ball in Ben Simmons' hands and surround him with those four guys. Good luck guarding that team.
Well, you know hold on.
I'm not saying they're going to stop anybody.
You say put the ball in Ben Simmons' hands. Okay, let's, for the sake of discussion, skip right over the where's his head.
Sure.
A super athletic player undergoing back surgery, you can't just assume he's going to be the same explosive sort of athlete. What happened to Dwight Howard after he had back surgery?
Listen,
guys whose game is based in, primarily on just elite explosive athleticism, back surgery is a massive red flag.
Fair.
On top of a pile of red flags.
No, I agree. That's why I said at the beginning, it's a big assumption. But let's think about for a second if those five guys are on the court together. That's the best offensive lineup in the NBA by a significant amount.
You know how Brett Brown used to dream and he challenged Ben Simmons to can you make one three or shoot one three a game? He just wanted him to shoot one three.
Mm-hmm.
The Nets could say to Ben Simmons, Ben, we don't care if you ever take a shot outside the paint.
Right. We're going to have you with the ball and surround you with four of the best shooters in the NBA, probably four of the 10 best shooters on the planet. And you can just attack the basket. You're one of the best creators of three-point shooters in the league or three-point shots in the league. Dribble in, kick out, open threes.
Or go down to the post.
So, I was going to say, hold on,
he's 6'10".
Or, you know what? Set a screen and roll to the basket.
Well, listen, you can do
because
that
if you think they're just going to hand Ben Simmons the ball and KD and Kyrie, oh, cool. Hey, Ben, we're open. If you see us, Pat, no, those guys need the ball in their damn hands.
What are you talking about?
I'm
not saying he would have the ball in his hands exclusively and they would never touch the ball. The point is, if you have Ben Simmons on the court with those guys, you're obviously best off with him initiating the offense. And then Kyrie's playing off the ball.
You tell Kyrie that. You tell KD that.
Well, that was what James Harden was doing with the Nets.
Oh, and that worked out wonderfully. He was just happy as could be.
Okay, well, but I'm not worried. I'm not worried about their offense. I'm worried. What did we pound away on them throughout the last season? And while everybody was knees were knocking, afraid to play them in the playoffs, we kept saying over and over, they can't stop anybody.
Well, of course. I mean, that remains.
McMahon, you're right. I don't know. Maybe Ben Simmons is not going to be able to move like he did before. That's fair. This guy can defend 1 through 5.
If healthy, Ben Simmons is absolutely an elite defensive player of the year candidate, kind of defender.
And Royce O'Neal is a plus.
He's a plus defender. Player.
Yeah. I mean, he's got to be better than he was last year, but he should be.
Yeah, he had a rough playoff series for sure. But no, he's a plus defender who spaces the floor and is not going to be complaining about touches, that's for sure. Nick Claxton is a player that they paid to keep. He's a nice option to have, certainly as your more traditional rim protecting, rebound and athletic. Yeah. Finishing type of guy.
They're very slight inside. They have no size inside. If they go up against, even if they go up against Boston with the size Boston has inside, they go up against Philly. Obviously, they go up against.
I mean,
Milwaukee.
You say they have no size, but they can throw out a lineup that has 6'11", 6'11", 6'10".
Yeah, but it's not
6'10" with KD. Yeah, the 6'10" with KD isn't. I'm still. I think he's taller than that, but whatever.
But when yes, they have tall guys, but they don't have size.
Yeah,
they have no Tristan Thompson no bulk inside.
Yeah, It's too bad DeAndre Jordan already signed with the Nuggets. Tristan Thompson. Yeah.
I can't believe they didn't give him $40 million again. Jeez.
Well, and Tristan stinks. Like Tristan stinks.
He's not a basket defender.
No, he at this point just isn't good. Like that, he would not help them. He would be like them signing DeAndre again.
I know, but giving them some months to find a center, it wouldn't, you know.
No, I mean, look,
but it's not catastrophic.
If you're trying to fill any hole in the NBA today, it's finding a center. Like there's more centers than any other position. They can find some size. I'm just saying, if you look at their team, they don't have much. Like Nick Claxton, I guess he's a rim protector. I mean, he's more of a offensive first option for me, but like you look at their team, they've got a couple guys who can, you know, Ben Simmons, if he's out there, obviously very good. Royce O'Neal, solid. Everybody else, pretty big question. They have no size inside.
You know who their best rim protector is? Their best rim protector
was KD. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. No, he would have to be for them to be really good. But I mean, look, again, this is a team that like they have a chance to have a historically good offense. If they can get those five guys on the court, and then it's like, can we get the defense to just mediocre level?
And we'll see, you know, they signed TJ Warren coming back off of a major foot problem.
Right. Another complete wild card.
Yeah.
If he could be healthy, that could be a huge pickup for them.
Yeah. You know, Cam Thomas, he can do one thing and that's put it in the hole.
But
he ain't guarding anybody either.
I know he doesn't guard anybody. He is an unapologetic gunner.
Oh, it is awesome.
One of the clips of the summer was Cam Thomas being asked at Summer League about working on passing more. And Steve Nash said, you're working
rolling
on passing
his
more.
Eyes.
Just straight rolled his eyes at the question on camera.
I mean,
like, oh, great.
Cam
Poor
Thomas.
Steve Nash. God, I wonder, in Steve Nash's heart of hearts, was he hoping that Joe Tsai would just say, okay, fine, we'll fire Steve Nash. He's like, pay me
I need a Steve Nash memoir after this is over.
Oh,
the Brooklyn years. I'm sure.
How does
he
have
do
hair still?
I mean, I've said this over and over. This is very, very proud Hall of Famer, with all due respect to Kenny Atkinson, who has, you know, proven more coaching chops probably than Steve Nash. You know, it's one thing to run over Kenny Atkinson.
Yeah, Steve only revolutionized the NBA and was the great point guards of all time.
I mean, Steve Nash is a two-time MVP, first ballot Hall of Famer, you know, and this is a guy that they are like wiping him aside like he's the guy rebounding under the rim. He may not be an elite coach, but he's a very proud man.
How do we know? Can he coach this team?
I don't know. Here's what I'll say.
Show me an elite coach who could have done a better job or done a great job under the circumstances.
Or would have wanted the job.
Seasons.
Well, I was stunned when he took it. I mean, I remember having conversations with folks when he took it and saying, why would you want this? And people saying, no, this is the type of job that if you were sort of on the fence about coaching, you would want, because you have a chance to win. You don't have to, like, you're not going to a team, you know, you're not Will Hardy, who's got to somehow take scraps and build it up. I'm like, okay, well, good luck with this operation. But now I've seen in the NBA where a star player has sort of, in this case, Durant nakedly asked for him to be fired and the whole world knows it. I mean, I've seen at times in the NBA where a player behind the scenes has pushed the coach towards the ledge and the coach gets backing from the ownership and front office and it emboldens them. I remember
somebody compared the situation. I don't remember who it was. I saw something this morning where somebody compared this to what happened with the Heat in 2010.
I was the one who said it.
Oh, you were the one who said it. Well, there you go. I teed you up without even knowing.
I thought it was somebody who was smart.
I just remember when the Heat go to 9-8 and LeBron bumps Spoelstra. And within a couple of days,
in Dallas,
Chris Broussard writes this story that says LeBron would like Riley to replace Spoelstra. Subsequently, we've heard the stories that LeBron didn't exactly go and say fire Spoelstra, but LeBron was passively, aggressively pushing in that direction. And so I remember coming to the first practice after that Broussard story thinking, you know, the Heat were very sensitive about everything at that time. And Eric Spoelstra looked like he grew 2 inches from the last time I saw him. Shoulders back, head high, completely embraced the situation.
Full spobot.
Completely asserted control. I was like, genuinely like, wow. He is, you know, this is a guy who was, now, if it happened today, of course, the guy's one of the most accomplished coaches in the league.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, I remember being really surprised. And that was because he was told by Pat Riley,
you're going to be my guy. Yeah.
Yeah. And at the time, he was a guy who looked about 26 years old, you know, the ex-video coordinator.
Currently, he looks like he's 32.
It's ridiculous. But I mean, certainly, you know, he wasn't a big name. You've got a legendary coach upstairs. Like, you can understand where LeBron was
already come down out of the front office before.
Yeah. Won a championship.
Mm-hmm. Right. When the star player wanted him to do it.
Right. So, like, you know, granted, it's more likely that once a coach is undercut by, you know, Stan Van Gundy got undercut by Dwight Howard, famously, you know, he's been trying to get me
press
fired.
Conferences.
Agree. You know,
oh, more here's often Dwight. Hey, you guys go talk to him. Ask him. See ya.
Right. But what was happening last year, as we know, and we don't, by the way, we don't have to have sources said, Kyrie came out and said, yeah, you know, Kevin and I run the franchise. That's the footing that they were on, you know, in the spring. And so now they've gone for Nash's throat. Nash has been backed by ownership and management. If he's ever going to have a chance to succeed, it's going to be now, because he's going to walk in there and go, you can't get me out of here. You tried and you can't get me out of here. We're going to do things this way. Now, it doesn't mean it'll happen.
For the sake of accuracy, Kyrie didn't say they ran it. They said they co-manage it with Joe Tsai and Sean Marks. Wait, was somebody left out of that comp? Oh, Steve Nash.
Yeah. I mean, listen, the Nets went into this offseason determined to not have things be the same as they've been the past 3 years next season. And to their credit, they have been successful to this point in doing that. They had power struggles with both their star players, Kyrie over his contract, Kevin over getting traded. They won them both. They're both on the team. Now we'll see. Now, obviously, it's a temporary win. I didn't say they won the war.
There's not a final on the scoreboard.
No.
You know, it ain't 0-0-0.
This very well could be a mission accomplished banner that isn't quite the mission accomplished. But as of now, looking at the situation, the Nets have gotten out of the summer what they wanted. They've reset the balance of power a little bit. They have a lot more say in what's going on there. And to your point, Brian, they have a chance to come in with a very talented team, have these guys on the court, and potentially be really good. Now, are they perfect? No, they have real flaws, but they got a lot of talent and they have the ability to be a really, really good team if these guys actually play and they could find a way over the course of the season to fix some of these holes that we've talked about. But I hope that we actually get to see it, because I think it will be a very fun team to watch. And, you know, they've got a chance again, like I've been saying for 2 months since all this stuff started, they've got a chance to be really, really good if they can get that five-man unit on the court, because I think that's the single best five-man offensive unit in the league right now.
I also want to say,
just in terms of talent, where do they rank in the East? Just in terms of talent,
I think probably. I was thinking about this the other day. I think probably third. I think they're right
Boston,
around
Milwaukee.
I think Boston, because to me, as good as they are talent-wise, part of talent is availability and dependability, and you can't. To me, you can't quite put Brooklyn in the same category as Boston and Milwaukee, even if you just are laying it out talent-wise, because that's part of it. But I do think they're right there with Philly ahead of Miami, in that if those two teams at least have the potential, if everything comes together right. You know, James has posted again on social media yesterday about how much he's been working this offseason. Like,
he does look clean.
Those teams have the potential to jump into that group, but they have to show me they could get into that group. Whereas Boston got to the finals last year, destroyed the Nets in the first round with KD and Kyrie healthy, by the way. And Milwaukee obviously won the title 2 years ago, and I think would have won the title last year if Chris Middleton wasn't hurt. So, yeah, I think they're you know, tied for third with Philly. But
okay,
in striking distance.
I mean, I don't know where Steve Nash was. I don't know if, you know, because a lot of times players and coaches spend time in L.A., I don't know if he was back in New York. Steve Nash, and I don't know if he'll ever answer this, and I don't know if I'll ever get the chance to ask him, and I don't know if he'll ever write that memoir, but Steve Nash, after publicly have his job called for, a man who doesn't need this job for anything, his legacy is secure. Come in to meet with Kevin Durant last week. I don't know if he had to fly from New York. Can you imagine that? Like, come get and take a 12-hour round-trip travel. Now, maybe he was in L.A. and he just had to drive down the 405. But if he was in New York or if he was in Canada and he had to fly all the way to L.A. to go meet with this guy who publicly wanted his head chopped off, I think it's remarkable. I mean, Sean Marks, too, but, you know, Steve is the guy who's more on the firing line.
And the guy who has to deal with them day in, day out.
Right.
I actually think this is all overrated, that part of it.
Jesus.
No. I'm just saying, Steve Nash isn't some like guy who hasn't been around the NBA. Like, Steve Nash knows what the NBA is like. I don't think that it's like he's seen everything you could see in the league, is my point.
I agree, but also, if a guy wants you fired, it doesn't mean you're ready to break bread a few days later.
I mean, yeah, I understand.
I think Nash probably avoids carbs.
I know the guy.
I'm sure
the guy's practically at his playing weight.
I'm sure he does.
All right. That's what's going on in Brooklyn.
We sort of talked about the basketball part.
Yeah, we did.
We talked about it. I mean, you cannot ignore the rest of it. I'm sorry.
All right. Before we go, huge, huge bummer. Chet Holmgren suffering a Liz Franck injury. Liz Franck injuries are not common in the NBA. More common in football. It's a bad injury. It's not ACL level, but it's the part of your foot that doesn't get much. I'm not a podiatrist or orthopedic surgeon, but I just know because Udonis Haslam had one that completely altered his entire career. And
is Chet Holmgren's playing 20 years.
Yeah, that's right. Well done, McMahon. It doesn't get much blood flow. It takes a long time to heal. Just bummer for the Thunder. Sam Presti had a press conference after the news came out on Thursday where he tried the best he possibly could to say that, you know, this is not the end of the world and we're going to be fine and Chet's going to be fine. And that's true. But no matter how you want to slice it, it's concerning when a big man has a foot injury, no matter how it happened or whatever. And
you can say, well, Joel Embiid has overcome the foot issues that kept him on the sidelines.
I mean, Brooke Lopez, we thought his career was over 10 years ago. Look at the guy.
Yeah. And, you know, it sucks that he's going to miss his whole rookie season. You know, they have an intriguing young core. Now we're going to have, you know,
I
we have
really,
to wait a year to kind of see that together.
Really was interested in watching him play as much as possible. Although the NBA League Pass situation would have made it very difficult for that on me because NBA League Pass is messed up and flawed, but that's another topic.
Wait, you don't, you can't get OKC games in Omaha?
No, it is technically
the Golden City on the Hill is in like four markets. So he can't see all
how many damn NBA teams claim Omaha.
You can't see Minnesota, Detroit, or Oklahoma or Denver, Oklahoma City, right?
Denver, Minnesota. By the way, I'm like 800 miles from Denver. Anyway, that's another topic for another day. I was extremely excited to watch him play. I was planning on going to see them in the preseason. They actually didn't release their preseason schedule until yesterday afternoon. And I was flicking their organization. When is your preseason schedule coming out? When is your preseason schedule? The NBA schedule had been out for 2 weeks. Anyway, I was so excited. I really wanted to go see him in the preseason. I've never seen him play in person. Big bummer. I'm not sure that this really changes the Thunder's trajectory. I don't think that the Thunder were going to win 37 games. And now that Holmgren is out, they're going to win 22. I don't think he was that valuable to their win-loss. Very rarely do rookies make a difference.
I don't know, man. I think he might have been. They very rarely make a difference in win-loss. Well, he's not a typical rookie, and that the stuff he does is sort of like he's more of a connecting guy than a guy who's going to have the ball in his hands a ton to begin with. On top of that, they've got two guys.
They've got two, you know, Gilgeous Alexander and Giddey. They've got two guys who can make the offense go.
Yeah.
You know, Lou Dort's part of that core. They've got some other young talent. Like, it's an intriguing team. And like this long rebuilding process, this was the year I felt like they could make, if they chose to, start to be competitive. And maybe that still happens. But I was excited to see Holmgren play too. He's such a, like you say, he's a kind of a defensive cleanup guy. He's got some offensive skill. He can step out and shoot it. There's, you know, just a lot to him. He's so unique.
Well, the other thing is they have no bigs on the roster. Like that's why I think he potentially could have had a really big impact on their team. Right. Like, they don't have any bigs. You take him out of the mix, like, they basically got like Mike Muscala and Jamichael, and they bought out Jamichael Green when they traded for him. Like,
Derek Favors, I think, still there.
Yeah, he might still be on the team. Like, they have nothing inside. Like, I'm looking. They have Derek Favors. Yeah, and then they've got Mike Muscala and nothing really else. Like, they were planning on him playing 30 plus minutes a game every game, and that's just gone.
Well, if you
one of our colleagues, I'm not sure they have said this publicly. Maybe they have, and I don't remember. But one of our colleagues recently was watching Chet in a pickup game in LA, where Embiid was in the pickup game, and just blocked Embiid several times, including on a 3-pointer.
Wow,
that's interesting.
Embiid also got some victories, got some W's in that matchup.
I was going to say, I bet you Embiid had a little success on the block.
Yeah. Apparently nobody who watched that run was like, who left without saying, wow, this Holmgren is a real difference maker on the court. You got to know where he's on the court at all times. And obviously, I mean, it's not like people haven't seen him play. So, that's what you're looking forward to if you're a Thunder fan. Like, okay, maybe you don't win that many more games. But, you know, look, we just talked last week. Bontemps and Pelton didn't have them in the tanking tier or whatever you called that tier.
Mm-hmm.
Their draft positioning tier? Yeah.
They're in it now by default. And there's two things about this that I think are relevant. One is that, you know, everybody has now started saying, oh, well, the Thunder shouldn't have drafted this guy. I got a bunch of texts about this yesterday. Oh, this guy's always going to be hurt. What was this team doing? Like, this guy had no injury history. This is a freak injury. Yeah. He's not the only guy.
And the concerns were more like, can his body withstand the wear and tear and the pounding? Is he going to hurt his foot?
Right. I mean, obviously, like you said, Brian, it's always scary when a big guy has foot injuries. We've seen a lot of big guys have lots of foot issues, but this is not somebody who's had a history of injuries. Like, Zion Williamson, going back to high school, had a history of injuries. Like, it is not stunning that he has had injury issues in the NBA. Other guys have had long-term injury issues that have followed in the NBA. This guy is not one of them. So I think it's been unfair that people have said that. The other thing is, to McMahon's point, I think Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is the most underrated player in the NBA right now, because he's been on this team that has been basically, you know, doing its best to position itself for the lottery the past couple of years, and is just completely off the map. And at some point, when is this guy going to look around and be like, I'm in my third or fourth? I think this is his fourth year in Oklahoma City.
He's in Oklahoma City. Yeah.
Yeah. This is his fourth season.
Oh, fourth year already.
He's on his second contract.
I forgot we had 3 years and 2 years. I forgot we had 3 seasons and 2 years.
So he's in his fourth season in Oklahoma City. Like, at what point is he going to look around? I know he just started a new extension, and I'm sure they're not going to be anxious to move him. But at what point is this guy going to look around and be like, I'm on this team where we just continue to win 23 games and nobody knows who I am and we're not going anywhere? Like, it'd probably be in his best interest for them to stick it out one more year and try to get Victor or Scoot Henderson on the team, and then have a completely loaded team going forward. Yeah. But at some point, if I'm him, I'm looking around going like, what am I doing with my career right now?
I know, but I think when he signed the extension, he knew that was a possibility.
Right.
Well, of course. I mean, yes. Obviously, he was going to take a max extension, which is basically what he got.
But he got it with no player option, which, you know, that's something where if he wanted to make that a sticking point, he might have been able to.
Nah, I don't. Maybe.
I mean, listen, it was after Donovan Mitchell got his player option. Just a fun little thing is you're having your conversations with scouts and coaches, executives, so on and so forth. Just ask them, hey, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander or Donovan Mitchell, who would you rather have going forward? You're not going to get consensus.
Oh, definitely not. I would rather have Shai personally. He's six inches bigger.
But if you think about if you ask the common, the casual fan, one guy's a much bigger name. And it's just a matter of one guy's and Donovan, the one thing that he.
Well, Donovan has had proven. Some pretty spectacular, humongous performances on big stages.
Yeah. In Donovan's one. So. Donovan's been in the playoffs. Right. And the other guy has been, like I said, he's been Mr. Irrelevant in the NBA among really good players. Yeah. Like he's just completely off the map. Nobody talks about him at all.
Well, the thing is. And I'm not saying that this is what the Thunder are going for, but like when you look at what the Thunder are doing, especially in the fact that they've now been handed some injuries, like with, the Embiid injury, the Sixers didn't know, they didn't draft him with a broken foot, did they?
He had a back problem, I believe. And then either the foot issue was right before the draft or right after. It might've been right before the draft.
Okay. Well, how different was what the Thunder is doing than what the Sixers did?
There's a lot of similarities.
The difference is that
Sam Hinkie didn't have the credibility that Sam Presti has.
I would say the other difference is the Thunder have a team full of drafted guys. The Sixers were putting out a team that was designed to win 8 games.
The other difference is Philadelphia, major market, flagship franchise, OKC, will be on NBA TV for like one half. And then
thing. The Thunder don't have the same set of options that the Sixers do. That's just the reality of the NBA.
And they don't have the same spotlight.
Well,
The Thunder are more forced into this process than a big market East Coast team is.
Yeah, but I do think it's a pretty significant difference from what Hinkie did. Like Hinkie was intentionally drafted Nerlens Noel with a torn ACL. He had a team full of guys that were basically, G League players that they were churning through 100 guys trying, and they found a couple guys. Like they found Robert Covington that way. They found TJ McConnell that way. They found NBA
Christian
players.
Wood they had for 15
minutes. They had Christian Wood for 5 minutes, but that was what they were trying to do. The Thunder have a roster basically of all guys they've drafted and are all, a lot of first round picks. And like some of them aren't going to work, but they are built. They have a team full of guys. They have some investment in. That they are. So I do think it's significantly different, even if the general theory of it is the same.
And well, the other thing is the Thunder were kind of the Thunder were forced into it, right? Paul George went to them and said, I want to be traded. Russ quietly was saying, hey, get me the bleep out of here too. Right. And they did that. They got Gilgeous-Alexander to build around the Paul George deal. Went about collecting picks and off they go. I will say real quick, the one silver lining, I think, with Holmgren being out all year is, certainly it's a year for him to work on his body. I don't know how much he can fill out, but it's a year where he can solely focus on getting healthy from the foot and working on his body, which, maybe that does end up benefiting him down the road.
All right. All right. Well, thank you for listening to Hoop Collective. McMahon, enjoy Slovenia and then I guess Germany maybe by next week. Thank you, Bontemps. Thank you to our producers, Jackson and Bruce, and Andrea as well. And we will talk to you. Everyone have a good weekend.
Adios, amigos.